From NPR News in Washington, D.C., this is Special Coverage. I'm Scott Simon. Senators Barack Obama and Joseph Biden will appear together as running mates for the first time in just a few moments. 12 hours ago, the Obama campaign sent a text message to supporters announcing that Senator Biden is Mr. Obama's choice to be the Democratic nominee for vice president. The two senators are preparing to address the crowd at the Old State House in Springfield, Illinois, on the grounds of the Old State House in Springfield, Illinois. NPR's Don Gagne is there. Don, thanks very much.
Hi, glad to be here. And we're expecting them to come out at any moment. A lot of activity and a huge crowd here, Scott.
And remind us of the significance of Springfield. The name means Lincoln to millions of Americans.
It sure does. And this old state house behind us is where Lincoln served in a state legislature. In this town, Senator Barack Obama began his career as an elected official in public service. As a state senator here, they have long drawn parallels between how Lincoln got his start and how Senator Barack Obama got his start. It is also a place that has really embraced Barack Obama, and it is where he kicked off his campaign 19 months ago in a day, I can tell you, was single digits. It was freezing in February of 07, a little bit warmer here today. We're in the high 80s, I think, and it is humid.
And it's an Obama crowd that's there, I'm assuming.
It is very much an Obama crowd, and, I work the crowd, and people are happy with the choice of Joe Biden as the vice presidential running mate, but I still found people who would say, I was kind of thinking he was going to pick Hillary Clinton at the last moment. And so a lot of them here, at least, in a state that Barack Obama doesn't have to worry about, still kind of getting used to the idea of these guys as a pair.
Okay, Don, the enthusiasm of the crowd and the demonstrativeness.
They have just announced Senator Obama. They've got this long catwalk set up in front of the stage, and Senator Biden, from my vantage point, I can't see them yet. So I have to tell you, I can see the podium, I can see the microphones. They are not up there yet. But, we're getting Senator Obama's usual entrance music. U2 is playing in the background. And the crowd on the far side of me is cheering. There I can see Senator Obama, white shirt sleeves, dressed black, waving to the crowd. He is right now by himself walking along that catwalk, shaking some hands, bending down, saying hi to people in the crowd. Of course, a sea of those blue Obama signs with the red, white, and blue Obama sun rising over the field. In the background, we can see the Springfield Marine Bank. On top of that, an American flag and snipers up on the roof with binoculars as Senator Obama steps up onto the main stage and to the microphones now.
We should explain, presumably police snipers.
Exactly, yes.
Up on the roof, protecting Senator Obama.
Police up on all of the roofs around here.
Senator Obama is approaching the podium and looks like he's going to speak alone first.
He's working his notes and he's just starting. Here he is, the senator.
It is good to be back. It is good to be back in Springfield. Feels like I'm coming home. It's a little warmer than the last time we were here together. I want to begin by just thanking a few people. I love you back. I want to begin by thanking somebody who could not have been a better friend, a better mentor, somebody who has looked out for me ever since I got to Washington and looked out for me when I was campaigning in here in Illinois. I love this man, and he is one of your own. Please give a big round of applause to the senior senator from the great state of Illinois, Dick Durbin.
And as Senator Obama noted, Senator Durbin is from Springfield.
And his lovely wife, Loretta. I also want to acknowledge your great mayor of Springfield, Tim Davlin. I want to thank Reverend Glenn Vanderkloot for the invocation. I want to thank Jim Frazier, the veteran who led the pledge. I want to thank Trey Daniels and Megan Ryan, who are my campaign organizers. And finally, just a small personal prerogative. One of our colleagues, a great congresswoman and an outstanding warrior for justice, Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones, passed away a few days ago. Her funeral is today. And I just want to let her family know that our thoughts and prayers are with them, and I know that she has gone to a better place. Now,
she, of course, was the congresswoman from Cleveland who
19 months ago.
Died 2 days ago.
It's been 19. On a cold February day. It was cold. Right here, on the steps of the old state capitol, I stood before you to announce my candidacy for President of the United States. We started this journey with a simple belief. The American people were better than their government in Washington. A government that has fallen prey to special interests and policies that have left working people behind. As I've traveled to towns and cities, farms and factories, front porches and fairgrounds in almost all 50 states, that belief has been strengthened. Because at this defining moment in our history, with our nation at war, and our economy in recession, we know that the American people cannot afford 4 more years of the same failed policies and the same old politics in Washington. We know that the time for change has come. For months, I've searched for a leader to finish this journey alongside me and to join me in making Washington work for the American people. I searched for a leader who understands the rising costs confronting working people and will always put their dreams first. A leader who sees clearly the challenges facing America in a changing world, with our security and standing set back by 8 years of a failed foreign policy. A leader who shares my vision of an open government that calls all citizens, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, to a common purpose. Above all, I searched for a leader who is ready to step in and be present. Today, I have come back to Springfield to tell you that I found that leader. A man with a distinguished record, a man with fundamental decency, and that man is Joe Biden. Yeah, Joe Biden is that rare mix. For decades, he's brought change to Washington, but Washington hasn't changed him. He's an expert on foreign policy whose heart and values are firmly rooted in the middle class. He's stared down dictators and spoken out for American cops and firefighters. He is uniquely suited to be my partner as we work to put our country back on track. Now, I could stand here and recite a list of Senator Biden's achievements because he is one of the finest public servants of our time. But first, I want to talk to you about the character of the man that will be standing next to me. Joe Biden's many triumphs have come only after a great trial. He was born in Scranton, Pennsylvania. We got some Scranton folks here. His family didn't have much money. Joe Sr. worked different jobs, from cleaning boilers to selling cars, sometimes moving in with the in-laws or working weekends to make ends meet. But he raised his family with a strong commitment to work and to family, to the Catholic faith, and to the belief that in America you can make it if you try. Those are the core values that Joe Biden has carried with him to this day. And even though Joe Sr. is not with us, I know that he is proud of Joe today. It might be hard to believe when you hear him talk now, but as a child, Joe Biden had a terrible stutter. They called him Bub-Bub Biden. But he picked himself up, and he worked harder than the other guy, and got elected to the Senate, a young man with a family and a seemingly limitless future. And then tragedy struck. Joe's wife, Nalia, and their little girl, Naomi, were killed in a car accident. And their two boys were badly hurt. When Joe was sworn in as a senator, there was no ceremony in the Capitol. Instead, he was standing by his sons in the hospital room where they were recovering. He was 30 years old. You know, tragedy tests us. It tests our fortitude, and it tests our faith. And here's how Joe Biden responded. He never moved to Washington. Instead, night after night, week after week, year after year, he returned home to Wilmington on a lonely Amtrak train when his Senate business was done. He raised his boys, first as a single dad, then alongside his wonderful wife, Jill, who works as a teacher. He had a beautiful daughter. Now his children are grown, and Joe is blessed with five grandchildren. He instilled in them such a sense of public service that his son, Beau, who is now Delaware's Attorney General, is getting ready to deploy to Iraq. He still takes that train back to Wilmington every night. Out of the heartbreak of that unspeakable accident, he did more than become a senator. He raised a family. That is the measure of the man who is going to be the next Vice President of the United States of America. That is the character of Joe Biden.
You've just joined us. Senator Barack Obama is presenting his choice for vice presidential nominee in Springfield, Illinois.
Now, years later, Senator Biden would face another brush with death when he had a brain aneurysm. On the way to the hospital, they didn't think he was going to make it. They gave him slim odds to recover. But he did. He beat it. And he came back stronger than before. And maybe it's this resilience, this insistence on overcoming adversity, that accounts for Joe Biden's work in the Senate. Time and again, he has made a difference for the people across this country who work long hours and face long odds. This working-class kid from Scranton and Washington has always been a friend to the underdog and all who seek a safer and more prosperous America to live their dreams and raise their families. 15 years ago, too many American communities were plagued by violence and insecurity. So Joe Biden brought Republicans and Democrats together to pass the 1994 crime bill, putting 100,000 cops on the streets and starting an 8-year drop in crime across the country. For far too long, millions of women suffered abuse in the shadows. So Joe Biden wrote the Violence Against Women Act so every woman could have a place to turn for support. The rate of domestic violence went down dramatically, and countless women got a second chance at life. Year after year, Joe Biden has been at the forefront of the fight for judges who respect the fundamental rights and liberties of the American people. College tuition that's affordable for all, equal pay for women, and a rising minimum wage for all, and family leave policies that value work and family. Those are the priorities of a man whose work reflects his life and his values. That same strength of character is at the core of his rise to become one of America's leading voices on national security. He looked Slobodan Milosevic in the eye and called him a war criminal, and then helped shape policies that would end the killing in the Balkans and bring Milosevic to justice. Joe Biden passed laws to lock down chemical weapons and led the push to bring Europe's newest democracies into NATO. Over the last 8 years, he has been a powerful critic of the catastrophic Bush-McCain foreign policy and a voice for a new direction that takes the fight to the terrorists and ends the war in Iraq responsibly. He recently went to Georgia, where he met quietly with the president and came back with a call for aid and a tough message for Russia. Joe Biden is what so many others pretend to be, a statesman with sound judgment who doesn't have to hide behind bluster to keep America strong. So Joe Biden won't just make a good vice president, he will make a great vice president. After decades of steady work across the aisle, I know he'll be able to help me turn the page on the ugly partisanship in Washington, so we can bring Democrats and Republicans together to pass an agenda that works for the American people. And instead of secret energy task forces attacking, stacked with big oil and a vice president that twists the facts and shuts the American people out, I know that Joe Biden will give us some real straight talk. I have seen this man work. I have sat with him as he chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and been by his side on the campaign trail. And I can tell you that Joe Biden gets it. He's that unique public servant who is at home in a bar in Cedar Rapids and the corridors of the Capitol, in the VFW Hall in Concord, and at the center of an international crisis. And that's because he's still that scrappy kid from Scranton who beat the odds, the dedicated family man and committed Catholic who knows every conductor on that Amtrak train to Wilmington. That's the kind of fighter who I want by my side in the months and years to come. That's what it's going to take to win the fight for good jobs that let people live their dreams, a tax code that rewards work instead of wealth, and health care that is affordable and accessible to every American family. That's what it's going to take to forge a new energy policy that frees ourselves from our dependence on foreign oil and $4 a gallon gasoline at the pump, while creating new jobs and new industries. That's what it's going to take to put an end to a failed foreign policy that's based on bluster and bad judgment, so that we renew America's security and standing in the world. We know what we're going to get from the other side. 4 more years of the same out-of-touch policies that created an economic disaster at home, a disastrous foreign policy abroad, 4 more years of the same divisive politics that's all about tearing people down instead of lifting the country up. We cannot afford more of the same. I am running for president because that's a future I don't accept for my daughters, and I don't accept it for your children, and I don't accept it for the United States of America. It is time for the change that the American people need. Now, with Joe Biden at my side, I am confident we can take this country in a new direction, that we are ready to overcome the adversity of the last 8 years, that we won't just win this election in November, we will restore that fair shot at your dreams that is at the core of who Joe Biden is and I am and what America is as a nation. So let me introduce to you the next president, the next vice president of the United States of America, Joe Biden.
Senator Barack Obama introducing the man he selected to be his vice presidential running mate at a rally at the old state Capitol building in Springfield, Illinois. I'm Scott Simon. You're listening to live special event coverage from NPR News. Senator Obama has introduced Senator Biden, and Senator Biden is now coming out. He's also removed his suit jacket. Like Senator Obama, it's a warm, sunny, sparkling day in the heart of America in Springfield, Illinois. Senator Biden, who's had health problems in recent years, is jogging onto the stage. He kind of made a wrong turn at one point, coming back full of ebullience. And the two of them are hugging. Senator Obama is escorting Senator Biden to the front of the stage, the two of them waving to the crowd together, exchanging some confidences, pointing out some people in the crowd, waving at the crowd. And in just a few moments, we'll hear from Senator Biden. As Senator Obama was introducing Senator Biden, he really dwelled as much on the circumstances of Senator Biden's personal life and his struggle against illness, his widowhood, shortly, just a few weeks, I believe, after he was elected to the Senate at the age of 29. Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware.
On the steps of the old State House in the land of Lincoln. President Lincoln once instructed us to be sure to put your feet in the right place, then stand firm. Today in Springfield, I know my feet are in the right place. And I am proud to stand firm with the next President of the United States of America, Barack Obama. Folks, Barack and I come from very different places, but we share a common story, an American story. He was the son of a single mom who had to struggle to support her son and her kids. But she raised him. She raised him to believe in America, to believe that in this country there was no obstacle that could keep you from your dreams if you're willing to work hard and fight for it. I was different. I was an Irish Catholic kid from Scranton with a father who, like many of yours, in tough economic times, fell on hard times. But my mom and dad raised me to believe. It's a saying, Barack, you heard me say before. My dad repeated and repeated it. He said, champ, it's not how many times you get knocked down. It's how quickly you get up. It's how quickly you get up. Ladies and gentlemen, that's your story. That's America's story. It's about if you get up, you can make it. That's the America Barack Obama and I believe in. That's the American dream. And ladies and gentlemen, these are no ordinary times. And this is no ordinary election. Because the truth of the matter is, and you know it, that American dream under 4 years, 8 years of Bush and McCain, that American dream is slipping away. I don't have to tell you that. You feel it in your lives. You see it in your shrinking wages, in the cost of everything from groceries to health care, to college, to filling up your car at the gas station. It keeps going up and up and up, and the future keeps receding further and further and further away as you reach for your dreams. You know, ladies and gentlemen, it is not a mere political saying. I say with every fiber of my being, I believe we cannot as a nation stand 4 more years of this. We cannot afford to keep giving tax cuts after tax cuts to big corporations and the wealthiest Americans while the middle class America, middle class families are falling behind and their wages are actually shrinking. We can't afford 4 more years of a government that does nothing while they watch the housing market collapse. As you know, it's not just the millions of people facing foreclosure. It's the tens of millions of your neighbors who are seeing the values of their homes drop off a cliff along with their dreams. Ladies and gentlemen, your kitchen table's like mine. You sit there at night before you put the kids, after you put the kids to bed, and you talk. And you talk about what you need. You talk about how much you're worried about being able to pay the bills. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's not a worry John McCain has to worry about. It's a pretty hard experience. he'll have to figure out which of the seven kitchen tables to sit at. Folks, again, it's not political sloganeering when I say we literally can't afford four more years of this non-energy policy written by and for the oil companies, making us more and more dependent from hostile nations on our ability to run this country, and literally, not figuratively, literally putting America's security at risk. We can't afford four more years of a foreign policy that has shredded our alliances and sacrificed our moral standing around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the bad news, but there is good news, America. We don't have to have four more years of George W. Bush and John McCain. The next president of the United States is going to be delivered to the most significant moment in American history since Franklin Roosevelt. He will have such an incredible opportunity, not only to change the direction of America, but literally to change the direction of the world. Barack Obama and I believe with every fiber in our being that our families, our communities, as Americans, there's not a single solitary challenge we cannot face if we level with the American people. And I don't say that to say it. History has shown it. When have Americans ever let their country down when they've had a leader to lead them? Ladies and gentlemen, we believe that our tomorrows will be better than our yesterdays, and we believe we'll pass on to our children an even better life than the one we lived. That literally has been the American way, and it can be that way again. But there's a big missing piece. The missing piece is leadership. In all my time in the United States Senate, and I want you to know there's only four senators senior to me, but Barack, they're still 44 older than me. I want you to know that part. But all kidding aside, of all my years in the Senate, I have never in my life seen Washington so broken. I've never seen so many dreams denied and so many decisions deferred by politicians who are trying like the devil to escape their responsibility and accountability. But ladies and gentlemen, the reckoning is now. And the reality is that we must answer the call or we will risk the harshest version and verdict of history. These times call for a total change in Washington's worldview. These times require more than a good soldier. They require a wise leader. A leader who can deliver the change we need. I'll say straight up to you, John McCain in the press knows this, is genuinely a friend of mine. I've known John for 35 years. He served our country with extraordinary courage, and I know he wants to do right by America. But the harsh truth is, ladies and gentlemen, you can't change America when you boast, and these are John's words. Quote, the most important issues of our day, I've been totally in agreement and support of President Bush. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what he said. You can't change America when you supported George Bush's policies 95% of the time. You can't change America when you believe, and these are his own words, that in the Bush administration we've made great progress economically. You can't change America and make things better for our senior citizens when you signed on to Bush's scheme of privatizing Social Security. You can't change America and give our workers a fighting chance when after 3 million manufacturing jobs disappear, You continue to support tax breaks for companies who ship our jobs overseas. You can't change America and end this war in Iraq when you declare, and again, these are John's words, no one has supported President Bush in Iraq more than I have, end of quote. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't change America. You can't change America when you know your first 4 years as president will look exactly like the last 8 years of George Bush's presidency. My friends, we have a... Yes, we can. My friends, I don't have to tell you, this election year, the choice is clear. One man stands ready to deliver change we desperately need. A man I'm proud to call my friend. A man who will be the next president of the United States, Barack America. You know, you learn a lot of things being up close with a guy. You learn. Let me tell you about Obama. You learn a lot about a man when you campaign with him, when you debate him 12 or 13 times, when you hear him speak, when you see how he thinks, and you watch how he reacts under pressure. You learn a lot about his strength of his mind, and I think even more importantly, the quality of his heart. Ladies and gentlemen, no one knows better than I do. The presidential campaigns are crucibles in which you're tested and challenged every single day. And over the past 18 months, I've watched Barack meet those challenges with judgment, intelligence, and steel in his spine. I've watched as he's inspired millions of Americans to this new cause. And during those 18 months, I must tell you frankly, I've been disappointed in my friend John McCain, who gave in to the right wing of his party and yielded to the very swift boat politics that he once so deplored. And folks, campaigns for president are a test of character and leadership. And in this campaign, one candidate has passed that test. Barack has a vision, and what you can't forget, you know his vision. But let me tell you something. He also has the courage to make this a better place. And let me tell you something else. This man is a clear-eyed pragmatist who will get the job done. I watched with amazement as he came to the Senate. I watched with amazement. He made his mark literally from day one, reaching across the aisle to pass legislation to secure the world's deadliest weapons, standing up to some of the most entrenched interests in Washington, risking the wrath of the old order to pass the most sweeping ethics reform in a generation. But I was proudest when I watched him spontaneously focus the attention in the nation on the shameful neglect of America's wounded warriors at Walter Reed Army Hospital. Ladies and gentlemen, I know I'm told I talk too colloquially, but there's something about this guy. There's something about this guy. There's something about Barack Obama that allows him to bring people together like no one I've worked with and seen. There's something about Barack Obama that makes people understand if they make compromises, they can make things better. It's been amazing to watch him. But then again, that's been the story of his whole life. I'll end where I began. This is a man raised by a single mother who sometimes was on food stamps as she worked to put herself through school, by grandparents from the prairies of Kansas who loved him a grandfather who marched in Patton's army and then came home and went to college on the GI Bill, and a grandmother with just a high school education started off working in a small bank in the secretarial pool and rose to be vice president of that bank. Ladies and gentlemen, these remarkable people gave Barack Obama the determination and drive, and yes, the values, to turn down that big job on Wall Street, to come to Chicago's South Side, where he helped workers help themselves after the steel mills had been shut down and the jobs disappeared. Ladies and gentlemen, my wife, Jill, who you'll meet soon, and is drop-dead gorgeous. My wife, Jill, who you'll meet soon, she also has her doctorate degree, which is a problem. But all kidding aside, my wife, Jill, and I are honored to join Barack and Michelle on this journey, because that's what it is. It's a journey. We share the same values, the values that we had passed on to us by our parents, and the values Jill and I are passing on to our sons, Beau and Hunter and Ashley. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here for their future. I'm here for the future of your kids. I'm here for everyone I grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, who's been forgotten, and everybody in Claymont, Delaware, and Wilmington, where I lived. I'm here for the cops and the firefighters, the teachers and the line workers, the folks who live, the folks whose lives are the measure of whether the American dream endures. Ladies and gentlemen, this is no ordinary time. This is no ordinary election. And this may be our last chance to reclaim the America we love, to restore America's soul. Ladies and gentlemen, America gave Jill and me our chance. It gave Barack and Michelle their chance to stand on this stage today. It's literally incredible. These values, this country gave us that chance. And now it's time for all of us, as Lincoln said, to put our feet in the right place and to stand firm. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to elect Barack Obama president. It's our time. It's America's time. God bless America, and may he protect our troops.
You've been listening to Senators Barack Obama and Joseph Biden speaking on the grounds of the old state Capitol building in Springfield, Illinois, the Democratic ticket of 2008. I'm Scott Simon. This is special coverage, live special coverage from NPR News. NPR's Don Gagne is on the grounds of the State House in Springfield. Don, you there?
Hi, Don. I'm trying to get over. I can hear you, Scott. They tend to crank up the music the minute the last word of the speech echoes away.
Yeah.
I think I can hear you now.
One of the things that I noticed, certainly in Senator Biden's speech before this this crowd, was he kept talking about his friend John McCain, but put a little elbow in his friend's ribs every now and then, particularly the remark about he has to decide which kitchen table he's going to sit at. You find this some indication of the role he's going to play in the campaign?
That is the traditional role for a vice presidential nominee to play the heavy, to go on the attack. Biden's going to have to do it in kind of that somewhat friendly way because he and McCain are friends. He also accused McCain of caving into the right wing within the party and launching Swift-boat style attacks on Barack Obama. Said he's very disappointed in, again,
Don. This is special coverage from NPR News. You're listening to live special coverage from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. At NPR News in Washington, D.C., Senator Barack Obama has presented his running mate in 2008, Senator Joe Biden of Delaware, at a rally in Springfield, Illinois. We're now going to turn to Alex Conant, National Press Secretary of the Republican National Committee. Mr. Conant, thanks very much for making time for us.
Good to be with you.
And you saw the speeches?
I did. I got to say, my first reaction is... Boy, that's as sure as a different Joe Biden than we saw on the campaign trail a couple months ago when he was saying Barack Obama wasn't ready to be president. And, you know, a couple months later, I don't know what's changed, but his rhetoric sure has.
Well, Noting that, and of course that's been irresistible for us to point out to Democrats when we interview them, would you say just at the technical level, they're both very gifted speech makers?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, they're both fabulous at rhetoric. I think Joe Biden is well known for his rather lengthy speeches on the Senate floor. But absolutely, I mean, they both give a great speech. Unfortunately, our argument is going to be that it takes more than a great speech to be a good commander in chief.
Well, anything you want to point to in either of their remarks that you think are going to be notes you want to sound in the campaign?
Well, I mean, let's just look at their records for a second. Joe Biden, he voted for the war, and then more recently, he voted for funding the troops as part of the surge. Barack Obama didn't vote that way, and at the time, Joe Biden was very critical of Barack Obama, saying that, Barack Obama was basically going to defund our troops and putting them in harm's way. I think that now that Joe Biden is his running mate, there should be and will be renewed focus on that vote and why Barack Obama voted to cut funding for our troops and why Barack Obama opposed the surge, which, as we all know now, was successful in Iraq. Mm. So I think that certainly when you talk about foreign policy, just comparing and contrasting Biden and Obama's records, especially if Obama's saying that he chose Biden because he's so smart on international issues, it raises some serious questions.
Hmm. Let me ask you to respond to the argument that I think both senators suggested, is that electing Senator McCain would be 4 years of what the country's already had over 8 years. And as I don't have to tell you, President Bush's approval rating is quite low.
Yeah, I mean, they want to make this election about John McCain. They want to make this election about George W. Bush. At the end of the day, no matter who the running mates are, no matter who the president is, this election, the choice before voters is going to be between John McCain and Barack Obama. And I think that the key question, considering the challenges that we're facing, both internationally and at home, considering all the challenges we face, the choice between John McCain and Barack Obama, voters have to ask themselves who is ready to be commander-in-chief, who is ready to lead, who has shown the judgment and experience to make those weighty decisions. And it's not going to be Joe Biden sitting in the Oval Office making those decisions. It would be Barack Obama. And so I think it's a very clear contrast. And by picking Joe Biden, it's almost as if Barack Obama is conceding that, yes, he doesn't have the experience that a lot of voters are looking for in the Oval Office. And, so he's bringing on a running mate who undermines his change message, who's been in Washington, D.C. for several decades now and, just breathes D.C. establishment Democrat. And he's bringing him on because voters are worried that Barack Obama doesn't have enough experience to lead. If this election is about very big issues, it's about the war, and it's about getting our economy going again, it's about having the experience and judgment to make the right decisions. And if you look at Barack Obama and John McCain, I think the Republicans match up very well, regardless of who is currently sitting in the White House.
Mr. Conant, recognizing that this is a personal decision that's left up to Senator McCain, do you take any cues from the Biden selection for who Senator McCain will go to for his running mate?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, John McCain has said that, he'll pick somebody who's ready to be commander-in-chief in case something were to happen, somebody who shares his values and shares his, is consistent with his ideology. I think we've got a lot of really good candidates out there, and I think a lot of folks are excited to see who he picks. But, at the end of the day, as exciting as it is to see, who the candidates pick to be their running mates, the most important thing is the top of the ticket. The most important thing is going to be the choice between Barack Obama and John McCain and who has the experience and judgment to be commander-in-chief.
Alex Conant, National Press Secretary of the Republican National Committee, thanks for spending the time with us, sir.
Great to be with you.
We're joined now by NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving, who's in Denver, where the Democratic Convention is going to open on Monday, and NPR Congressional Correspondent David Wilna. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Scott.
Good to be with you, Scott.
And let me just put this one, the high hard one, out there first. Supporters of Hillary Rodham Clinton will amount to just about half of the delegates there who are going to meet at the convention floor on Monday morning. What do you think? How do you project? Have you heard from some of them as to what their reaction is to the selection of Senator Biden? Ron?
Yes, Scott. I think that is the big question facing this convention, and I would hazard the guess that only one decision by Barack Obama would have totally satisfied or even close to totally satisfied the Clinton delegates, and that would have been to make her his vice presidential choice. I think it's clear that from the beginning of this process, he did not see that as a viable option for him. For a variety of reasons we don't need to get into now, she does not appear to have been given serious consideration. That is going to be a subject for some resentment for many of these delegates. That having been said, and there's no one who can satisfy those delegates like Hillary, this was probably the pick he could make that would be least offensive to those same delegates. If he had chosen a Tim Kaine, if he had chosen an Evan Bayh, if he had even chosen, say, for example, a woman prospect, such as Kathleen Sebelius, the governor of Kansas, that probably would have been more annoying to Hillary Clinton supporters because those people were the least like Hillary. In the case of Joe Biden, because of his extraordinary experience in the Senate, because of his chairmanships, because he has been such a powerful figure within that world, he answers a lot of questions on issues that Hillary Clinton raised during the primaries, and he appeals to many of those same white, blue-collar, working-class people who were not Barack Obama's immediate natural constituency and who flocked to Hillary Clinton when it came down to being between Obama and she. So I would say at this point he was probably trying to reach out to those Clinton people in the one way he could other than by picking Hillary Clinton.
David?
And one other point is that Biden was very scrupulous about remaining neutral throughout the Democratic primary season. He was one of 16 Democratic senators who did not align himself with either Obama or Clinton during the primaries. So unlike these other possible running mates who've been mentioned, Biden was not somebody who was identified necessarily with the Obama campaign beforehand. And I guess in terms of placating Hillary Clinton supporters, I guess that's one small point in his favor.
We want to play something. The announcement came by text message that began to be sent out, I guess, shortly after 3 a.m. Eastern Time. And by dawn, the McCain campaign had mounted an ad in response on their website.
What does Barack Obama's running mate say about Barack Obama?
You were asked, is he ready? You said, I think he can be ready, but right now I don't believe he is. The presidency is not something that lends itself to on-the-job training.
I think that I stand by the statement.
Now, let me follow up on this with a couple of questions, and I'll pose the first one to you, Ron. By choosing somebody who is so experienced as Senator Biden is, and using that as an argument in his favor, does Senator Obama simply wind up emphasizing his own lack of experience?
I don't think that there's any way around the characterization of his history as a lack of experience in Washington and a lack of experience in foreign policy in particular. By recognizing that and by saying, I need to address that in the realm of choosing a vice president, Barack Obama makes a frank admission of that, and there's really no way around it if you chose not to make a frank admission of it. So I think that's going to be seen actually as one of the positive aspects of this choice.
And Don, let me get you to respond to this first and then Ron. In a mild way, this raises a concern that some people have always expressed about Senator Biden as a candidate for national office, which is that he can't find the off switch, that sometimes he's just he gets carried away and says things that he has to wind up explaining.
Yes, he has a bit of a reputation of being Senator Blowhard, his propensity to go on.
Well, by the
on,
way, I'm told I called you Don. I know your name is David.
It's not the first time it's happened, Scott. But
go ahead, Frank.
We're both from families of nine children. In any case, I think that Biden is somebody who has this tendency to go on and on. It's interesting that Obama twice used the word bluster when criticizing the McCain campaign, when bluster is a word often associated with the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. And it's something that I guess we'll see as the weeks go on, how much he keeps that bluster under a certain amount of control. I mean, when he was first starting out his run for the presidency, he got in trouble the first day of his campaign, describing Obama as articulate and clean. And there was Biden's foot right in his mouth on day one. This is something that I guess is something that probably was considered about whether he should be a running mate or not. But in the end, I guess that his capacity to be a lovable Rottweiler is maybe something that outweighed that.
And this clip that I suspect is already making the rounds that certainly I've seen or read, an appearance he made in 2000 on Meet the Press, where he made a very eloquent argument for John McCain, to be John Kerry's running mate.
Yes. Well, I think that McCain was seen by many Democrats as somebody who, on many issues, was closer to them than to President Bush. But I think things have changed very much in the last 2 years, especially with McCain and his moving much more towards the right and aligning himself with many of President Bush's policies. And I guess dredging up old praise of McCain would also possibly underscore how much McCain has changed since that praise was first delivered.
Mm. Ron Elving, let me get you to address the critical state strategy. People often theorized before the Biden selection was made that they wanted a vice presidential running mate who could help them in Ohio, help them in Pennsylvania, help them in Missouri. Joe Biden was born in Pennsylvania, but he's from Delaware. Does this selection meet any part of that criteria?
He is from Delaware, and yet it's from a part of Delaware that is really part of the Philadelphia metropolitan area, Wilmington, Delaware is. And you can look at him and say he's not sufficiently from Pennsylvania, but he can at least get up there and say, I was born and raised in Scranton. That's not something that any of the other people that was being who were on the short list could say. He couldn't translate that to some degree to talking to people in Ohio. Now, if Ted Strickland, the governor of Ohio, very popular governor there, would have been available, would have made himself available, he took himself out of the running for vice president, he clearly would have a stronger appeal strictly to Ohio. And there might have been somebody else, had he been on the short list, such as Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, who might have had a more direct relationship there. But I think Joe Biden is somebody who can at least plausibly talk to those folks and say, look, I know what your objections are to Barack Obama. I've been there myself. I've asked those questions, and I've resolved them in my own mind, and I think now he's the right choice. And by choosing me as his vice president, he's convinced me all the further.
Also, I think beyond the geographic association with Pennsylvania, both Obama and Biden mentioned the fact that he is a Roman Catholic, and this is another appeal, I suppose, to a voting bloc that is crucial for Obama to prevail in November. And Biden has a record, especially on abortion related issues, that's much more mixed than Obama's. It's something that I guess could appeal to some people who had doubts about Obama's record on abortion.
Hmm. Don Gagne and Ron Elving, both in Denver, where the Democratic Convention is going to open on Monday. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.
Senators Barack Obama and Senator Joe Biden took the stage today on the grounds of the old state capitol in Springfield, Illinois, before 35,000 cheering supporters. Senator Obama introduced Senator Biden as his running mate.
Joe Biden is what so many others pretend to be, a statesman with sound judgment who doesn't have to hide behind bluster to keep America strong. So Joe Biden won't just make a good vice president, he will make a great vice president. After decades of steady work across the aisle, I know he'll be able to help me turn the page on the ugly partisanship in Washington so we can bring Democrats and Republicans together to pass an agenda that works for the American people. And instead of secret energy task forces attacking, stacked with big oil and a vice president that twists the facts and shuts the American people out, I know that Joe Biden will give us some real straight talk.
And then Senator Joe Biden of Delaware took the stage.
The next president of the United States is going to be delivered to the most significant moment in American history since Franklin Roosevelt. He will have such an incredible opportunity, not only to change the direction of America, but literally to change the direction of the world. Barack Obama and I believe, we believe with every fiber in our being that our families, our communities, as Americans, there's not a single solitary challenge we cannot face if we level with the American people.
Stage in Springfield, Illinois, where Senator Obama introduced Senator Biden as his running mate. Jill Goldstein is a presidential, vice presidential, and constitutional law scholar at St. Louis University in St. Louis. His first book was The Modern American Vice Presidency. Professor Goldstein, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
And vice president has to be ready to be president on day one, and yet not quite yet. How do you see Joe Biden as fitting into the profile of vice presidents?
Well, I think that he's somebody who certainly is a presidential figure by virtue of his service and his leadership in the Senate. And so I think really that there are two important filters in choosing a vice president. One, you have to choose somebody who's presidential, who would be a plausible president. And second, you want to choose somebody who doesn't have something in their background that's going to be embarrassing in a way that you can't handle it. Mm-hmm. And he clearly is somebody, I think, who would fit that presidential requirement.
I have to ask at the same time, are we making too much of this? Because I think we can both recall vice presidential picks on both parties in the past who were criticized or ridiculed, and yet the person running for president wound up being president. How much does it really count for?
I think that we're not making too much of it. I mean, ultimately, if both presidential candidates choose presidential running mates, then the focus is certainly going to shift on the presidential candidates. I think if one of them makes a mistake, mm-hmm. The vice presidential selection reflects on the judgment of the person who chose them. The fact that Richard Nixon was elected with Spiro Agnew, or the fact that George Bush was elected with Dan Quayle, really shouldn't lead us to conclude that the vice presidential candidate doesn't matter. What it should tell us is that in those elections, the party that won had enough advantages and the party that lost had enough disadvantages that the vice presidential choice wasn't determinative. The vice presidential choice isn't the only factor that matters, but I think it does matter. And in a close election like this one appears to be, it can be very important.
What about, and this has been raised and we've just got about a little under a minute left, Senator Biden sometimes says things that will tie up the news cycle in 2 to 3 days of explanation. Is that a concern here for the Democrats?
Sure. That's one of the disadvantages of selecting Senator Biden. By the same token, there are no perfect candidates. When you choose a running mate, you're not choosing an ideal candidate who's 100% advantages and no disadvantages. Everybody on both sides has strengths and weaknesses, and it's a question of trying to make the best pick under the circumstances.
Professor Goldstein, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Joel Goldstein is a presidential, vice presidential, and constitutional law scholar at St. Louis University in St. Louis. His first book was The Modern American Vice Presidency. You've been listening to live special coverage from NPR News. You can stay tuned to the rest of NPR's news programs throughout today and throughout the evening. We're certainly going to be continuing to cover the selection of Senator Obama of Illinois, of Joe Biden of Delaware to be his vice presidential running mate. Of course, the Democrats from all across the country are convening in Denver, Colorado this weekend. On Monday, the Democratic National Convention opens in Denver. You've been listening to live special coverage from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.